The Many Roads to Japan, A Search for Identity, by Robert W. Norris. Chapter 3. In the fall, John signed up for some general education courses and began training for the basketball season. Tryouts for the team were to be held in October. It was a strange new world he found himself in. Although he was only 2 years older than the other students, John felt pulls apart from them. It was as if his experiences in the military and prison had aged him. The others seemed like children with their bright enthusiasm and optimism, their social cliques and parties. Most of them were fresh out of high school and, like himself 2 years before, had never been beyond the boundaries of the Redwood Country of Humboldt County. He abandoned himself to basketball as he had once done in high school. At the practices, he was like a madman racing up and down the court during the different conditioning, dribbling, defense, jumping, and shooting drills. Offensively, he was inconsistent as he had not played with the other players and did not know their moves. His passes often hit them in the head, bounced a step beyond their reach, or soared too high for them to catch. His shots were poorly selected and sometimes forced. Only his defense showed any consistency. John made the team as a second-string guard. The team had a mediocre season. John had a few good games, but he did not feel a part of things. He was too different from the others. Study also seemed superfluous. He had no academic interests. The classes were easy enough to pass with minimal effort. After 2 semesters, he dropped out of school to go back to work at the plywood mill. He was 21 years old with no education, a bad military record, and no prospects. His future seemed bleak and worthless. 2 months later, he was offered a job as a laborer on a construction project on the north side of Lake Tahoe. It provided a chance to escape the vacuum he had fallen into. He packed his belongings, moved to Lake Tahoe, and rented a one-room cabin about 20 minutes from the work site. John's weekdays were spent on the job carrying tools and boards for the carpenters, digging drainage ditches, nailing off roofs, sweeping up sawdust, and hauling garbage to a nearby dump. He spent most of his time alone, thinking about where his life was headed. He grew a beard, and his hair reached down to his shoulders. Near the beginning of winter, he had an argument with the job foreman. The foreman told John to cut his hair and shave his beard or he would be fired. John refused and quit the job. He returned to Arcata again and spent the winter living on his savings and playing in an amateur basketball league. He was going through changes he did not understand. There remained in him a fundamental sense of not belonging, of no longer being an American. Something burned in his heart and called to him to make a move, a decision that would thrust him out of his lethargy into confronting the outside world again. He had to make a break, but he also knew that whatever he did would change his outlook forever. One day, while browsing through a bookstore, John found a book titled Europe on $5 a Day. The book explained how it was possible to experience the world on a small amount of money and a lot of faith in one's fellow man. All a person needed was a passport, a backpack, and an adventurous spirit. The idea hit him with the force of a hammer. The search for his self, for a direction in life, had to take on a physical manifestation. John set about making preparations. He still had about $1,000 in savings left. He went to a travel agent and bought a round-trip ticket for a flight out of New York to Europe for $200. The return ticket was good for a year. He applied for and got a passport. For another $100, he bought a 3-month rail pass, good for all the rail lines in Western Europe. He was ready to hit the road. 3 weeks later, the amateur basketball season ended. The following morning, John was out on the highway, hitchhiking and waiting for his first ride. John was filled with excitement. The lure of the unknown was out there in the vastness. He was anxious to confront it, to jump into and wallow about in the experiences that awaited him. A new life lay ahead. With him were his life belongings contained in a small leather backpack, 3 changes of clothes, a down-filled sleeping bag, a nylon poncho, $500, and a bota bag for drink. 3 quick rides carried him beyond the Redwood Country to Highway 20, which cut across California to Lake Tahoe. An old rancher in a cattle truck picked him up and took him as far as Sacramento. He waited 3 hours before a Mexican in a beat-up Chevrolet pulled over. The Mexican chattered non-stop as they caught up with the Mexican's friend, who was hauling a forklift on a flatbed truck to Reno. They plodded behind the truck at 15 miles per hour. The sky was clear with many stars. They inched their way up the mountains. A full moon illuminated the snow blanketing the Sierra Pines. Early in the morning, they arrived in Reno and parked the car to get a couple hours of sleep. Just after dawn, John caught another ride that took him into the desert and let him out when it turned off the main highway. The Nevada desert stretched out in all directions, a mixture of auburn wasteland, rolling tumbleweeds, and splotches of unmelted snow. In the far distance were the Rockies, their snow-topped peaks barely discernible on the horizon. They looked like a jagged spine. A VW van with a woman and 2 children on their way to Denver, Colorado, stopped. For the rest of the day, they continued through the Nevada wasteland. By nightfall, they were partway into the Utah salt flats. They pulled to the side of the road on the outskirts of Salt Lake City to sleep. Morning was a peaceful calm, gray clouds breaking up with traces of sunlight shimmering through them. They proceeded through the Wasatch Mountains, the road slick with snow and ice, across the Continental Divide, and on to the plateaus of Wyoming. A carpet of snow covered the land. The road seemed to continue forever. Occasionally, a jackrabbit bounded across the road. Here and there, a distant elk would lift its head to scan their movement. At Cheyenne, the woman and her 2 children turned south. It had been a good ride covering 2 days and 3 states. Sticking to hitchhiking as his main mode of travel, but once in a while riding a bus when he was stuck too long in one place, John passed across the Great Plains of Nebraska, out of the snow now and through farming towns with red brick buildings and dirty Main Street sidewalks, where old folks sat languorously on benches watching the movement of the world. He stopped in Omaha, where he spent 2 days reading in a public library and walking the streets. He slept in a cheap room one night and the bus depot the next to save a few dollars. On and on now, another 600 miles to Peoria, Illinois, a rainy night, a $3 motel room with plaster walls and a rattling steam heater, a saggy mattress, a 6-pack of cheap beer, a newspaper with stories about returning prisoners of war and Watergate, morning and a bus ticket to Gary, Indiana, where he took a Skid Row room for one night, across the expanse of Indiana, where squares of long furrowed fields, ready for seed, stretched in all directions, another ride to Cleveland. Thoughts of the Kent State shootings filled John's head as he passed through Ohio into Pennsylvania and on toward Buffalo, New York. He spent one night sleeping in a wooded field off the shore of Lake Erie. Early the next morning, he walked along the beach, then stopped to watch the whitecaps form. The lake was an immense ocean that disappeared beyond the horizon. Gray clouds covered the sky. The sun struggled to break through. He continued another 3 miles through pollution, dilapidated ghetto buildings, broken glass, and abandoned cars to downtown Buffalo. He found the bus station and bought a ticket to New York City. At last there he was, bounding through the door of the Port Authority bus terminal. His first impression of New York was an endless forest of skyscrapers that seemed to make the redwoods pale in comparison. He stood transfixed, overwhelmed by the sound of car horns and construction machinery, by the smell of exhaust fumes and Armenian bakeries. The scene was alive with movement. Slowly he began to walk the sidewalks, mouth agape and mind empty. He found the William Sloan House YMCA on 34th Street and took a room. For the next week, John explored the streets, Greenwich Village, Yankee Stadium, the Empire State Building, the United Nations, Rockefeller Center, Madison Square Garden. He watched double features in afternoon movie theaters for a dollar, then ate at ethnic delicatessens. The entire world seemed to pass him by as he paced the streets. The midget paraplegics, the hipster pimps, the hollow-eyed beggars, the decrepit winos, the Central Park artists, the sophisticated men and women in their business attire. Finally, he was on Icelandic Airlines Flight 181 on his way to Luxembourg. He was leaving behind the country of his birth, the country he no longer felt a part of, venturing forth with no itinerary, just the hand of fate to guide him. It was as if some divine source were dragging him toward an unknown destination. It was blind obedience to a gut feeling, not unlike his refusal to fight in the Vietnam War.